You are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is Good Morning Comrade. You can check us out every Tuesday on Good Morning Comrade 102.3 FM. And you can also get more information at goodmorningcomrade.com. Today we have the full crew. The band is back together, folks. We have Aaron, Robert, and Scott in the studio. Yeah. What's up?
Hey.
Back together and all full of milk.
Hey guys, what's been? Oh, jeez, you're disgusting.
We're still so mad at you,
Scott. You're disgusting. Aaron. Scott's a milk drinker, and that is just not acceptable.
I mean,
I'm a milk drinker too, but you can't just reference milk.
I mean, it's good
with no context. It's
I'm gross. Proud. Mm-mm. I mean, I'm drinking it on a nice, humid day. It's great.
Yeah, I know this is gonna sound like
refreshing.
This is going to sound silly, but remember the Got Milk commercial where they had like the guy that was trying to answer the question, but he had like a peanut butter mouth?
Yeah, Aaron Burr. You know who directed?
That was who was the director of that one? That was
I swear to God.
You're lying.
It's a Michael Bay commercial.
Yeah, that was Michael Bay. Yeah, I remember that. That's
like
true.
He started doing commercials and he was like, I'll just make really weird movies. That espouse my conservative values.
Movies that don't have any plot, but they have tons of explosions.
Like, they're not. They're like visual, like kind of ballets, you know.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of explosions and.
Oh, we're not calling that. We're not calling Michael Bay movies visual ballets.
They're way better.
Has there ever been a good one, like for real?
I mean, they're all bad, but he tries to do things with like interesting, like.
I remember I went to go see Pearl Harbor in the studios, and that was a ride. That was a wild ride.
Yeah, really bad.
How so? I've never seen that because it looked awful.
Oh yeah, well it is. It's about a guy.
It wasn't good.
It's about like a bunch of fake deaths. Like a guy thought he was dead, so his best friend dates his fiance.
Josh Hartnett was in it.
Yeah,
that was a Ben Affleck movie.
Cooper Gooding Jr. is in it too, right?
Yeah, he was good. He's always
he was.
Good. Yeah, it wasn't Cuba Gooding Jr.'s fault that movie sucked. I give you that.
Yeah, he was. That was the part of his career where he was like a name on the marquee.
Yeah, that was after. Show Me the Money.
The thing about Pearl, like Pearl Harbor in general, that I have, and I have no love for the hot take. I have no love for the. Japanese Empire.
You don't like the Allies?
Yeah,
or the
absolutely.
Nazis?
The people who committed the rape of Nanking. No.
Yeah,
but here's the weird thing about Pearl. It's always like people always describe like, oh, this is the worst attack on America. They always try to compare like 9/11 to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah,
and I'm just like Pearl was a legitimate military target, and we were running an embargo on Japanese oil. So it's always like those crafty Japanese. He's those sneaky. They snuck a military target because of an oil. Because we weren't letting any oil through. Like we would have done the same thing.
Yeah,
it's just so weird. The framing is so weird.
Well, I mean, there was. It's not weird because it's weird. It's weird for. I mean, it's framed that way for a reason, though, right? It's framed that way so we can go to war with Japan. That was the whole point.
Which we should. I mean, that was. I mean, if you're gonna call a war the good war or whatever, the Japanese Empire was like committing atrocities. All over the east. So it's like if you're gonna go to war against somebody, my God, they needed to get put down. They were running crazy, like in the Philippines and China, and they were awful. They were as bad as the Nazis were, for sure.
I don't know, I'd have to go back and look at the specifics of that. But like the Nanking.
Read some history, man.
Well, you're right. I will say though that. Yeah, like tearing up like Nanking and like all of that like land, all of the sort of like China and up and down the coast of there is pretty screwed up. I also like Russia was about after they had finished up in Berlin, was ready to start invading. Was ready to start invading Japan too, weren't they?
Yeah, and that's a theory. Mm-hmm. That's a theory I heard is because I've heard it. I've read that, actually. It's not like a conspiracy thing. Is that the reason why we drop nuclear weapons on Japan is not to defeat the Japanese military, because we were, by hook or crook, like firebombing was actually like, we were firebombing them every other day.
Yeah.
It was actually doing worse damage.
Just destroying entire islands' ecosystems, completely destroying it.
Thing was, it was to show the Russians, the Soviets, that we had nuclear weapons, and mm-hmm. to get them to kind of like back off,
yeah.
and not try to take Japan, and then also like, hey, we have this real uneasy truce now.
Yeah.
You know, the Berlin Wall is going up. Y'all are going to control West Germany. We'll control East, mm-hmm. or vice versa that. And hey, don't mess with us.
Yeah. Like, those are the first two shots.
It was a show of force.
The first two shots in the Cold War or something like that. I mean, like, I'd have to, you know, dig into it more to actually kind of take a position on that. But it's a really interesting prospect. And it definitely is an interesting counter to the way that we sort of think about it, especially when people talk about, well, we had to bomb them because it was better than what, you know, was already happening. And plus it made my grandpa safe or something like that, you know?
Right. I feel like anybody listening to this who doesn't live in New Orleans, if you do come down here and you're interested in stuff like this, which I am, mm-hmm. Go to the World War II Museum. I feel as far as like, I've been there twice, and I expected it to be like this super propaganda, like, you know, America was saved the world kind of thing, mm-hmm. which it is, because they don't talk about the Soviets at all, but the
zero.
At all
zero
talking about the Soviets, but the way they talk about, like, hey, like, we did internment camps, and hey, like, we were super racist, mm-hmm. and you know, like, all the propaganda that we had against the Japanese,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just thought that was interesting. I won't call it balanced. I'll call it like more than what I expected.
Yeah, that's fair.
As far as, yeah, I was like, okay.
Yeah, but there's like, geez, I mean, you can have a whole museum. I mean, there are whole museums about the Eastern Front in Europe too. I mean, but that's just completely not involved in that museum. But anyway.
No, not at all.
We are going off at the mouth here about World War II. But
it's not like there's anything else going on in the world.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. So how's everybody doing? I guess we should check in, because, I mean, I haven't heard all your voices at the same time in quite some time.
That's true.
How you doing, Aaron?
I'm good. Doing better.
Good.
Better than previously. So, feeling better about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Yeah, what you been up to?
Well, let's see. As we discussed in pretty significant detail, it was my birthday last week.
Yeah.
So that was a fun time. And I spent my birthday going to a protest,
mm-hmm.
In which Robert looked like the very face of an outside agitator. He was wearing all black, his like black stomping boots. He had a full on gas mask, very serious goggles. And then
gloves, I'm sure.
T-shirt tied around his face like a balaclava, so only his eyes showed. And everyone was looking at us as if he was a cop.
Yeah? No goggles?
What?
I did.
You had goggles too?
Yeah, I've got like the what's that company that makes the like kills or whatever whatever. I had the like the serious, like, I'm gonna be like using a electronic nail gun.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like whatever, like goggles, like the hard. Yeah,
yeah.
They're like super form fitting, and I've had those for a while. I've had those goggles since when did we do like the? It was like the gun protest. It was like after Charlottesville, after Heather Heyer got murdered. Yeah. And we had that protest, mm-hmm. like the Heather Heyer thing. And I had those. So I've been having that stuff like ready to rock. Mm-hmm. But thank God for the TikTok kids, because I couldn't remember, because I'm getting up there in age. Like, mm-hmm. it's been a while since I've been to a protest. I couldn't remember exactly how to take a regular t-shirt and turn into a balaclava. And I was like, let me Google this. And the TikTok kids, they were there for me.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, this is how you do this, like real quick. And I was like, awesome.
TikTok is a resource.
Well, I just don't. I mean, honestly, like, if there's I don't know, fascists out there, like, let's rock, let's do mm-hmm. it. Like, I want them to know, like Aaron said, you out here looking like a whole Antifa. And I'm like, yeah, that's right.
People kept, like, looking back at us, like,
literally had,
is he the one who put out those bricks so we could, like, cause a problem?
Yeah, I literally so had,
actually elaborate on the bricks thing.
Oh, so this is, I think, a thing that's been happening all over. And I have not been able to confirm whether this is a rumor or not, but it was kind of all around the internet this past week that random piles of bricks were being left all over the city. And the implication being that they were put out for us to use to destroy things in our protests. Sorry, Johnny's thing is to be super quiet all day until I'm on the phone with a client or recording.
He's the worst.
Johnny.
We love it. So ugh.
Anyway, mess. So yeah, so they're putting out bricks. And so, Robert, did you put the bricks there?
No, but I did have in my full, like, get up, I did have it, like, there was, like, a group of kids. And these kids look like, they look like, whatchamacallit, like I would say Bywater kids, like mm-hmm. crunchy, like squatter kids who mm-hmm. are out there. They're no stranger to stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Like Bywater, for anybody who doesn't live in New Orleans, is like our it's kind of like our bohemian neighborhood. And
it used to be.
I know.
It's like the most gentrified part of the city right now. It's moving down into Araby even.
That's very true. But I like went and grabbed a bottle of water and I came back and I past those kids and I had like and I like I one of them just said oh shit, like they were, I was like no, it's like it's not that serious. It did make me feel kind of good though, I'm not gonna lie, my ego got stroked a little bit.
Yeah.
It was interesting though, like being out there, because I felt like we didn't go the night that the NOPD tear gassed. But we definitely did go the next two nights.
Mm-hmm. So that was, I think that was Monday that they started the tier. Because I remember.
It was Monday because they were talking about it at work on Tuesday.
Well, I remember because Aaron and I, we did a show and right as we finished up, we like click onto Twitter and we're like, okay, wow, we were actually saying that, you know, things were kind of chill here. And then like, as soon as we like look at anything,
it was very unchill.
All of a sudden. Then there was like the, so let's talk about it actually. So there was,
I mean, interesting development on that. Like I watched this, mm-hmm. The New Orleans, Police superintendent's meeting today.
Before the development, let's talk about what happened. So on Monday last week, there was so a bunch of the protesters started walking across the Greater New Orleans, the Crescent City Connection, right, to the West Bank, and ended up cops started shooting tear gas, and there was sort of like a stampede, and people got, I think about seven people got arrested, and there was a lot of like really wild times. Like that was when that was the first time in New Orleans where the cops really started acting a fool here for this, this time around, at least as far as I've seen, Robert.
Yeah. I mean, obviously as far as I've seen, cause I didn't live here through Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know how much you guys talked about that. Why that bridge is so important.
That was Danziger Bridge, but
Danziger Bridge. Why it's so important to be able to cross the bridge to get across, because did y'all talk about that on the last show?
No, we didn't.
I don't want to cover it.
Let's go.
I mean, people were murdered during Katrina trying to cross from Orleans Parish to Jefferson Parish mm-hmm. by the police, and then the police covered it up. And then ironically, this kind of goes in what I was saying. Here's the development. I watched the police superintendent today talk about how great the police have been handling everything. And luckily that we had some media talk about, well, what's up with this cover-up? And he's mm-hmm. like, what are you talking about, a cover-up? And the thing, just like they tried to cover up the Danziger Bridge incident, mm-hmm. they tried to cover up that they popped tear gas on people on Monday night by first saying it didn't happen when there was obviously video evidence of it happening. Second, by saying, oh, they were attacked when there was no evidence that the police were attacked in any way. Our local media, which is not radical at all, just local, like
it's
Fox
owned by
NBC,
John Georges.
Yeah, they confirm the same thing. They're like, what are the police even talking about? Mm-hmm. And now they're just trying to say it was rogue cops. So now that they've told two lies already, and now we're supposed to believe the third one, which I actually do believe that. But the thing is that you, if they are rogue cops that just decide to just pop gas, then you covered for them and you got caught.
Well, here's
so this
thing.
Is business as usual for the NOPD, who was under consent decree.
All right. You are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. The show is Good Morning Comrade. Get more information, goodmorningcomrade.com. You know, that brings up a really interesting point, Robert, when you were talking about the cops and how they can say that, oh, wow, there's just a couple of cops that are making it, you know, bad for everybody else. But when when there's like... and I'm not even trying to get into this whole line of like there's good protesters and bad protesters. I'm not doing that. But the justification the cops use it that there are good protesters and most of the people are peaceful. But we had to tear gas this entire crowd because some people were looting, right? So they can get away with saying, oh, that was just a couple of rogue cops and, you know, everybody else is off the hook. But when it comes to who people peacefully protesting, oh, they can just blame it on one or two people and just start collectively just tear gassing and pepper spraying and beating people with clubs and all these other sorts of things. And that's what we're seeing throughout the country is the sort of like rollout line that they're standard using.
You've got a force on the street that's sanctioned by the state that has no accountability. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about, let's really focus in on New Orleans and what happened Monday. They have no accountability and they can lie. They can, I mean, no pun intended, gaslight the public, even when there's...
Tear gaslight the public.
Yeah, even when there's video evidence, and then they wonder why people are out protesting. Mm-hmm. Like, the exact reason, exactly what happened on Monday is exactly why people are protesting. Mm-hmm. Why the police must be abolished. Mm-hmm. Or at least the compromised position is extreme reform.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, it's...
Definitely defund them.
I use the word Orwellian way too much on this podcast.
Newspeak and stuff.
It's Orwellian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's newspeak. I mean, that's what it is. It's when they start talking about like up is down and all these other things that are complete and utter lies, but they're passing it off as like, oh, it's actually common sense, right? They're just pretending everything is normal. What did you see out there, Aaron?
I mean, there's a lot of anger. A lot of really righteous anger. That was great. But I was pretty electrified by the crowd.
Hopefully not literally.
No, definitely not literally. I think a lot of people really were expecting some violence to happen and not on the side of the protesters, but on the side of the police, because there were people who, like, I'm a lover, not a fighter. I've never been in a fight. I just can't imagine really. Yeah. Throwing down. But like I had my goggles on, I had my little Maalox or my milk of magnesia with my water in my pack. Like we were ready, and that was pretty powerful because it just seemed like there was a lot of people there who maybe aren't normally the type to be in those kind of escalated situations, were just ready. We walked through a neighborhood that I have a lot of clients in, and that is predominantly Black. And that was really, really powerful to me. Seeing people who live in the neighborhood, you know, come out and cheering and, you know, filming and, you know, it really, because I do think sometimes, and I don't know if this is true for movements or if it's just kind of the narrative, it's kind of distorted, but there is this idea that it's white kids coming out and causing problems, and you know that the members of the community don't actually want them there, or that they're using, you know, police brutality or, you know, whatever other issue to push forward their agenda items. I've seen like, oh, they're just trying to, I saw someone tweeted like, we need to like stop calling for prison abolition. This march is about civil rights. And I was like, oh, what?
Oh, those are two discrete things, right? Oh, yeah, they're totally different.
Yeah, two very separate things, nothing to do with each other. But so I think there's a very pretty extreme narrative around that. And not only was the march extremely diverse, it was well received by the neighborhoods that we were marching through. And that felt really, really nice and very powerful. So that was Thursday night. Friday night's event that we went to was kind of a different, there was still a lot of anger. There was a lot of kind of righteous feelings, but it was a lot more moving. Mm-hmm. Like I was very angry on Thursday and very angry about what was happening with the world. But then the one on Friday, there was a much longer rally. The rally, like the speakers went on, I think for about 2.5 to 3 hours. And that it was in Jackson Square, or not in the square, because they closed it.
Yeah, they closed Jackson Square. Anytime anything, like any kind of protest happens, they just lock it up. Like they have to protect it. Like, Andrew Jackson's statue is the fine China or something.
Oh my God. Andrew Jackson. What a mess person was. But yeah, so it was a lot of speakers. And then we kind of very slowly like marched up to the river. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was about, because we marched silently while one of the speakers was singing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just felt it like really intensely. Like, number one, I think it was strategically a really good idea, because people had been marching all week, and quite a few people who got pepper sprayed on Wednesday were there Thursday as well. So, you know, my little, that I probably, if I was a hardcore protester, I would not have been wearing, but my little like steps tracker did like 17,000 steps on Thursday. And so I think it was strategically giving people a break so that they don't burn out, because it wasn't as much like actual marching. But then there was a lot of people there who, I think there was a lot of older people. There was a lot of people in wheelchairs. There were a lot of people with canes. A lot of people who I think would have a really tough time if it came to the kind of violent reaction with police. And it honestly made, because before the protest, I just saw so much chatter online that they're like all the French Quarter business owners and homeowners they're going to loot. They're going to burn everything down. The police should not let this happen. Yeah,
please send a garrison to the French Quarter is what they're basically saying. They're like,
it was
like,
ridiculous.
Please occupy us militarily is what we're demanding.
Yeah. That's what they were essentially asking for. And it made them look so foolish. Mm-hmm. Because not only was the protest extremely peaceful, like we didn't go by anybody's stores. Mm-hmm. Like we went from Jackson Square up to the river, which is like a half a block walk. So it was just, I felt so impressed with, it's People's Assembly and the New Orleans Worker Coalition, mm-hmm. and also Take 'Em Down NOLA, I think, mm-hmm. are all jointly sponsoring. And I was so impressed. Mm-hmm. They put it together. The speakers were amazing. Mm-hmm. Intersectionality, like huge, I don't want to say shout outs. It's like clearly not the right vibe I'm going for, but they talked extensively about the need, like, you know, mm-hmm. black rights are trans rights. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about Black Lives Matter, we're talking about Black Trans Lives Matter.
Right.
And then there was something that one of the speakers said specifically that I thought was so powerful, because it was really interesting. You had a lot of people who looked like Antifa super soldier, like Robert. You had a lot of people who were clearly leftist of the left. And then you had a lot of people who had masks that said butter emails or impeach Trump or get Trump out of the White House.
Any,
like a lot of,
any pink pussy hats?
No, just because it was so hot. But there was like a lot of pink pussy hat vibes, mm-hmm. going on. And I was expecting, you know, I was like, oh man, they're probably so uncomfortable with some of like the intense rhetoric that's being said. But the speaker said, you know what? You don't know. You came to this place. Mm-hmm. And you came to this place on your own terms. Mm-hmm. We are going to respect each other enough to allow everybody here to come to the same place at their own speed. Mm-hmm. You might have all the answers, but unless we all have all the answers, then you're by yourself. Mm-hmm. And it was just this beautiful reminder, because I think sometimes, you know, we talk about this a lot, just like the kind of the nature of the discourse, like where it's happening on Twitter, it's happening on social media.
The least meaningful place, the most alienated place in the world from actual things happening is Twitter.com.
Yeah, there's just like a lot of tribalism when it comes to, and like a lot of alienation of natural allies. Like, mm-hmm. okay, maybe someone is not as left. as me, but doesn't mean that they don't have the same end goals. And like, mm-hmm. what does that mean? And so I needed that reminder. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, it was said with so much grace mm-hmm. and like so much power that it felt so right.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also, you know, I realized these marches have been the first time that I've been to like a march that did not have like police protection, which is like kind of insane. And there were a couple of times when people kind of started acting out in the crowd mm-hmm. and they were with.
Yeah.
And there were some pretty awkward moments because white allies were called out for not stepping up immediately and forcing a black woman to, you know, take initiative. And, you know, that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. But it was an awkward moment that needed to happen. So yeah. I felt it's really good.
Now, I have seen such systems, and I'm not going to sort of like, I can't really connect it to specific groups, I suppose, but there are systems of kind of internal sort of like discipline to make sure that people, like, if those things kind of come up, there are methods and procedures so that they're handled. You don't need cops for that, you know. And you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to the protests that y'all went to, but I was able to go to the one on Saturday that was in Jefferson Parish, which some of the families who had been murdered by Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, and that was a decently sized in the rain. Action where, you know, there was folks from the families, as I said before, some folks from DSA New Orleans and some folks from the Jefferson Parish NAACP, amongst other groups, kind of all showed up, and they ended up walking. You know, they had a couple speakers. They it was not that many. It was just like a couple of the families for the most part, and then they went up through the neighborhood, and then he actually kind of went and walked on Causeway Boulevard for a couple of minutes, which is a major thoroughfare, and then they kind of made their way through back to Franklin and Playground. It was really great to see folks out here in JP, you know, doing this kind of stuff, and it was great to see folks going out in solidarity with who aren't even from JP. You know, don't live in JP, doing that kind of stuff, and there was a good mix.
Yeah,
I guess I want to say too on your point, Aaron, is that about how good the New Orleans People Assembly is doing. There's, I don't want to say compared to other protests, but I feel like we're not getting co-opted. Like I hear from a lot of like different leftists about their individual protests, like trying to be co-opted by liberals. You know, they're like, oh, well, let's just make it a parade and yeah. let's just have a fun little jaunt. And like the People's Assembly is not even about that. And kind of, they're kind of doing the best of both worlds message, which is they're saying, look, we're peaceful. We're going to be peaceful. But we still reserve the right to burn the city to the ground if we want to. Don't get it twisted. You really don't have any say in that because it's our city. We labor here.
Don't make
you're
it
not
do
gonna
it.
Tell us. Yeah, you're not going to tell us what to do. And unless you're towing that line, then you've already seen throughout time, not even recent history and past history, you know, not so recent history, how just peaceful protest itself will be ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And how you had the whole reason to march, the whole reason to organize, to say like, this is how many people are concerned about a thing. And if you do not want to respond to these people, then God help you. I mean, mm-hmm. let's be real about the situation. That's why marching is effective. That's what you're saying when you mobilize that many people. You mm-hmm. know, I say this all the time, like Martin Luther King did not just cross, you know, Selma, the bridge in Selma, and yeah, Bull Connor felt bad.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's the threat of, this is how many people we have mobilized, and I can do with these people as I want, when we want,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I just really applaud them for yeah. kind of for keeping it radical, but then also like, these are our demands at the same time.
Pretty clear.
Yeah. The speaker who I felt I really just really found to be the most powerful and the most moving, his name is Angela Kinlaw.
Mm-hmm.
She is with the People's Assembly. And I think, Robert, you said that you maybe reached out to them or were planning on it, because I would love yeah. her on the show. She's just such a powerful speaker. And yeah, I don't remember being at a action or a protest or anything in kind of in my 33 years, and feeling quite as moved, but also just like inspired to act. Yeah, I haven't felt like, okay, this is achievable. Like, I haven't felt as radicalized, but also like as hopeful by like a speaker's words in a really long time. And she's really good at her job. So thumbs up to her. It really gave me hope. But also, like you're saying, like the idea that, Jefferson Parish is getting involved, because it's one thing for New Orleans has always been a progressive city. Like, it's one thing for New Orleans to be having kind of big old movements, but, you know, Jefferson Parish, we've seen like Denman Springs.
Some
students, Louisiana.
My friend Chris.
He's like, tiny places.
My friend Chris, who's a teacher out there at my old high school, actually, he attended a demonstration in Chalmette at Sidney Torres Park that was organized by students. It's really kind of catching fire everywhere. Was, I think, last Friday, I believe. That's amazing. It's this is something that's really resonating, and the core message is we need to, it's either defund the police, abolish the police, divest from the police, somewhere around those lines. It's right now the orientation and the relationship that our society has with police is not appropriate. We're going to talk about that more on the other side of Station ID. You are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is Good Morning Comrade. We have the whole crew, Scott, Jeff, Robert, and Aaron on the program. So defund the police, abolish the police, abolish the carceral state, divest from police. You could say it a whole bunch of different ways, but the main message is kind of the same, right?
Yeah. And I also just think it's so funny that, like, literally 3 weeks ago, we're like, oh, isn't it so great? This police department agreed to sit down with some sexual abuse advocates and learn about trauma. Yeah. And things.
Look
and
at them; they're doing better.
We're like, nope, we're gonna defund it all the way.
I love it, and I don't know. It really does show that there's it's just a complete and utter difference from what sort of like people seem to the prevailing media and mainstream narratives around cops is that like cops are warriors or a class above or whatever, and this is the complete opposite. And that's why even like the most when you are not talking about like sensitivity training or whatever when it comes to cops, which ends up giving them more money, and you're actually talking about reprioritizing the budgets of states or of localities to get police out of there, that's a completely and utterly different thing. No matter what language you're using, you're saying cops get too much. And I don't know, that's a really important kind of approach, especially when we're going to be facing like tons of austerity because a lot of state and local governments are going to lose money because they're funded in part by like sales taxes, which are going to be going way down. The sort of money that they accumulate from these sales taxes is going to go way down because of the coronavirus. People are not out spending money like they used to do.
Well, coronavirus is over, obviously.
Right.
It was a hoax by the government.
Oh my gosh.
Caused by 5G, right?
Oh yeah.
The podcast going to get fact checked by Twitter? Or is
I hope so. There's no, that can really punch up the SEO numbers if we can really make a big controversy about it. We could say that Facebook is fake news. We call it fake book, even.
Fake book.
But yeah, that's it did kind of not.
That's clever, Jeff. Fake book, like fake news.
Yeah.
That's good.
But one of those sorts of things that did kind of like get people's brains off of coronavirus was this. Murder of George Floyd and the way that cops have been behaving ever since.
I think, yeah. I mean, we've also talked about this, but I don't think this would have taken off the same way if it hadn't been for coronavirus, if there hadn't been this, push that we all kind of understand that, oh, the government is not going to be there to help us if in our times of need. If the pandemic is not going to do it, like, they're definitely not going to listen to our peaceful protest.
Yeah, I think this whole, thing where some people have to work and, be on the line while other people like are just kind of like out, like disenfranchised, has really kind of made people look at how like things are right now, you know? And then like when the police started like being like, oh, we're just going to start going back to business as usual, like people were just like, no, I don't think so. Like this is like, what's wrong? Like we've been removed from this and we don't miss this part of it. Like, you know?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And people have time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They aren't worried about losing their jobs if their job's already gone.
And so I think about this too, in the sense that like, this is kind of part of the reason I think that a lot of, like bosses and a lot of these governors and all these other kinds of, you know, people that run our world and our lives didn't want people like the world to actually be shut down so that people can have the time to actually think. So now that people have had or not everybody, obviously some people hadn't been able to stop, but I mean when some of the folks kind of have their time with it, where the sort of air kind of like goes out of the balloon, you know, for 5 minutes, and people have the chance to sort of like think and they aren't kind of pushed to the limit, at least not in terms of like what they should be like that they should be working every single second of the day, you know, when, and then people actually get the time to sort of develop some kind of self-advocacy and some kind of a self-respect almost and a community of solidarity almost.
You know Occam's razor, right?
Yeah, yeah. The simplest explanation is usually Yeah.
Like ever since like that came out, there's been all these nerds trying to like come up with concepts of like an anti-razor.
An anti-razor?
Like, yeah, like they just like don't like the concept, so they'll try to come up with like a counterpoint, and it mm-hmm. just hasn't worked out for them.
Can you give an example?
Yeah.
No, I can't explain it, but it's just like basically trying to be like basically just trying to have like an inverse of Occam's razor. Be like well,
they're trying to come up with the most complex scenarios.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna come up with an anti-grill.
I think I see what you're saying. You're saying that because
I'm coming up with an anti-grill pill.
Okay.
I think back before people would be like, I just want to grill because they were at work, and when they're at home, they just wanted to grill. But now people are just like stuck in their homes, and they're like,
well,
I've been grilling, and I still feel bad.
So
yeah, yeah, it's like absolutely a limit.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you feel good about the world? And like, it's that idea of like, okay, yes, I'm like 100% for you need to be whole as an individual before you can like help other people. Or that's not true.
Yeah.
As RuPaul would say, if you don't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? Mm-hmm. At progressive hero RuPaul.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
There's like this idea that
famous fracker RuPaul.
I know that was like kind of the worst, one of the worst things I found out in 2020. But that's a side note.
That was one of the worst things in 2020.
Okay.
I mean, if I had to make a list, I might not make the top 10.
All right, at my heart, I still am a white, like recovering liberal. So like, some things hit me a little harder than others. Okay, and like,
You could take the Karen out of the girl, but
it's this idea of like, okay, like, and it's the same reason why our country was so bad at our coronavirus response. It's this idea that your personal well-being is more important and is the only thing you have. It's more important than the collective well-being, mm-hmm. and that it's the only thing you have control over.
Yeah.
So it's this idea that like, because I know I personally, like, yes, there's going to be times when I need to take a step back and, like, recharge and, like, be by myself. That's just who I am. But I also know a part of the reason my mental health has been so bad is that, like, I cannot focus only on my well-being and ignore the world. It makes me feel worse. Mm-hmm.
Now, let me kind of, like, roll back and sort of, like, bring this back to the sort of grill pill situation, specifically because the way that I understand it was posited by Chrisman was that it was specifically in regards to the election. Like, basically, this is not our problem anymore. You know, Trump, Biden, you know what? Screw it. I'll be grilling. You know, I'm not going to be doing any of that stuff. But like, but I mean, he's been out at these protests. He's been doing, you know, support. And you know, this is becoming the thing that is people's grill. People have found their grill, and this is the thing that actually does give people's lives meaning, and that is bringing people together, because it's something that people can finally tangibly do when they're not isolated. And all of those little self, like those little like capsules or compartments that people kind of like retreated to when the coronavirus situation started, just completely got exploded for the most part. I mean, like, obviously if you're not going out because you're you don't want to get coronavirus or your family, but you can show support in other ways, that's fine. I think it's fine. But I mean, yeah, it's definitely changed the way people think going forward. And I do think also, in addition to that, people like more people stayed at home and more people distanced themselves and more people wore their masks and gloves and all that stuff during coronavirus than didn't. And I think that highlighting the folks that didn't do it and also I know a lot of elected officials, governors and stuff, would try and put the onus on individuals to essentially say, well, it's on you to do it, on you to do all that, as opposed to sort of like affirmatively signaling in any other kinds of way what the appropriate behavior should be in a policy in a meaningful sense. That just tells me, I guess it confirms what I was already thinking. But it just tells me that they're never, ever going to be like here for any kind of a big solution. They are looking for individual judgment on individuals.
Yeah. And that's true. But I should say it, our government response to coronavirus was like a nightmare situation, mm-hmm. but individual response I thought was actually really impressive. Yeah. Because there were so many people who, at their own, risking their own sanity and well-being, and it's hard to be isolated, and it's hard to want to do something and not go out and be able to do it. Like, people still stayed home, and it was specifically to help each other. Mm-hmm. It was to make sure that your grandmother didn't get sick or your neighbor didn't get sick. And I know in my neighborhood we have a couple of people living here who are at risk, and mm-hmm. so people and do stuff for them. Like, they don't have to go out into the store because people are going for them. And I think not only did we see that our government does not have our back, I think we saw in a more tangible, more powerful way that we actually do have each other's backs, and that we, like, when push comes to shove, we do care about each other societally. Mm-hmm. And we've been so wrapped up in our just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. That it's really easy to lose sight of just how much people care about each other. And I think one of the very beautiful things about the United States is all of our issues and our very many issues, we do have a lot of diversity in a way that a lot of other countries don't. Mm-hmm. And we still have, there's obviously systemic racism, and there's personal bigotry, but there's also a lot of love between neighbors and between each other. And I do really think that's, it's easy to lose sight of, but I think being reminded of it has been helping this other movement, this, defund, abolish the police, this Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. because we're reminded that, hey, individual actions do count. Like, our government might not be willing to do what it needs to do for coronavirus or do what it needs to do for Black Lives Matter. But as individuals, we certainly are willing to do what we need to do to show up for each other. Mm-hmm. And even one thing Robert and I were reading is, because we talked about how mad we were at Drew Brees, and how Drew Brees, and you're still allowed to hate Drew Brees if you want, Scott. But Brittany Brees, Drew's wife, came out with, I thought, a very beautiful statement. And it was essentially, yeah, y'all are right. We heard you, and we're sorry that it took this outcry. But, we thought just being not racist was enough. And now mm-hmm. we're seeing that absolutely. Like, there's no reason why we shouldn't have believed the lived experiences of our teammates. Like, we've had to do some soul searching. And I think a lot of people in this country are going to have those kind of revelations. And I think it kind of behooves us, especially us, like me as a white person who has already kind of come to these conclusions, to be more gracious to people who are, they should have known earlier, there's like really no excuse why they didn't, but we like people coming to things when they come to them, it's just it is what it is. And well, still we want people to be having these revelations.
So I have a take on this too, and maybe it's not as sympathetic, but I think it's kind of come down on the same side of it that you are, but I'm maybe it's a little bit more cynical. Like I think the reason that there was response to this was probably more of a material, like, oh wow, we might lose sponsorship, we might lose, you know, whatever because of this. And so if maybe I'm just giving bad faith, and that's probably not fair on my part, but I'm very cynical, at least when it comes to you know, wealthy athletes or whatever. But I will say this, even if that's the case and they responded to this material sort of like pressure, that's fine with me. Good on you. And there should be, I guess on the other side, a positive set of incentives for folks to do the right thing. So I guess like, critical support for the thing that Drew Brees did this time, and also keep throwing touchdowns.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, who cares why they did what they did, as long as they're doing the right thing. Mm. And because even if she doesn't fully believe what she wrote in her statement, the conclusions were really sound. Mm-hmm. So if another person read that and was like, oh, okay, like, let me do some soul searching myself, like, great. At a certain point, like, we don't have to change hearts, right? We only have to change.
Win. We just have to. We have to get whatever material power we can do, and I think that if you, there is a certain sense to where like you can engage with this, and like you can essentially own yourself by being like, you know, I guess very harsh in sort of like the virtuousness that you're trying to display. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I think this is the difference between the personal is political and the personal is not political. Like, the political is the political. Like, mm-hmm. That is like the job of all of us as individuals, is to call out our friends and family when they do have bad takes. Like, we know them as individuals. We know whether they're good people or not. Like, we can have these conversations and like respond with love and understanding and caring and, you know, firmness, but still like, hey, we still love you. We just want you to be part of this. We want you to be on the right side, and we know you can get there. And like, what is it going to take for you to get there? That's what we can do as individuals. The problem has been is our political system, our politicians have been trying to do that exact same strategy for like the masses. And it doesn't work on a mass level.
No, it only crushed.
Already know and care about the person. Mm-hmm. So they care about. Like, Drew, it works for Drew Brees because Drew Brees, like, materially needs the city, but also he's been on the Saints for a long time. He's lived in the city. These are his neighbors. Like, our good opinion of him is important to him. Now,
Drew Brees, Pelosi's
good opinion, like, people in, let's say, Alabama don't care about Nancy Pelosi, right? So it's like our politicians have been trying to, like, piecemeal stuff and like change hearts and minds, when our politicians should just be like, this is what we're doing, come to terms with it or not.
Yeah.
And like, so we've been kind of like, I think sometimes on the personal level, we've been going too hard with what we love and care about. And then our politicians have been going way too easy. We need to like flip.
Yeah.
We need politicians to just like, hey, we're doing this. Like, who cares? And then we as individual leftists can change hearts and minds.
Yeah, like everybody should be treating their politicians like the people of Minneapolis just treated their mayor.
Yeah.
And what did they do?
Boo.
You want to talk about it, Robert?
I mean, I guess Sure. So he came down and he thought he was going to do performative nonsense like a lot of politicians I see. He thought he was going to do performative nonsense and come down with his Black Lives Matter Corona mask on. And they said, okay, you want to be here, Mr. Mayor? Right now, are you going to defund the police? Yes or no? And he's like, nope. And they're like, get the F out of here.
Mm-hmm.
We have no time for you. We have no time for this. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of tie this into kind of what we were talking about before the show. So I, as somebody who's like been super into electoralism and then very quickly turned to like, can't do electoralism, like, it's not working, it's not for me. And now I've actually kind of flipped again and be like, we need to do electoralism we need to vote blue no matter who. And it's not enthusiastic. It's not something like because it will fix everything. It's just the facts that I look at our own city council here in New Orleans and how they're saying the right things right now. And that's because they are at least Democrats. If we had like a Republican city council, it would be very, very hard to even get them to say the right things. At least now we can hold them accountable for them saying the right things in the right way we should move forward. Same thing with our mayor. I don't trust any of them. I really don't even like any of them. But we're at least moving in a direction to be able to hold them accountable to where we wouldn't be able to do that with right-wingers. And this brings it to, like, we were going to get into it. I wanted to save it. I have a thesis now of why a Biden presidency will be better for the United States than even a Bernie Sanders presidency would have been.
I've been waiting for this because, like, this is, like, the kind of big brain takes that I just live for.
So, and you can blow, I mean, I'm fully ready for you to, like, blow it up.
Oh, lay it on me. I at least respect that you're going to throw it out there.
So, first, the first part of it, and maybe not the most important part, is that, you know, A, the MAGA chuds, the Trumpistas, don't get to do a victory dance because Trump won't win.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That's number one. The most important part is, though, if you've got a guy that, if we as activists and leftists vote in a guy who we actively hate, who my ideas haven't changed on him, he's still a rapist. I still hate the guy. He's responsible for, like, George Floyd's death.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very directly. Very, like, very directly.
He's directly responsible for it. But crime bill. If we get him in the White House, now we have a president who people will be right from day one still angry at.
Yeah.
Still angry about. So the people, like Aaron was saying, all the, like, the people who've come to this movement, the Bernie people who, like, maybe weren't invested in Black Lives Matter so much, they just wanted to get Bernie Sanders elected, and they're in the streets now, they're new leftists, they will stay in the streets. We will not have a I would call it an Obama hangover, to where if Bernie was elected, we would all breathe a big sigh of relief, and then we would be like, oh, man, cut Bernie some slack. Mm-hmm. He just got in there. Oh, man, well, he's trying his hardest. Oh, he's only one guy. We wouldn't cut him the slack like we did with Obama.
Yeah, well, so
we're not going to cut Biden the slack, and we would push the same amount of people would barricade the White House like they're doing right now and locking Trump essentially inside the White House to Biden as they but they would not do that to Bernie.
Yeah. So I actually don't think that's that ridiculous of a take, to be completely honest. I think that's actually a fair, like, I think to think that it would be a better like Biden winning would be better than Bernie, I think that's kind of like, that's where you lose me. I think you want to get the best person in. However, there is utility in basically having the person that wins, like you want the best person that could possibly win to win. And, like, it sucks so much to hear it, but, like, Biden is definitely 100% better than Trump. And so, like, the thing is that, like, Biden still sucks. Biden is still a target and somebody that you could organize against. And also, to sort of, like, bolster your point in a certain sense, I mean, like, Biden won't get the same just on its face heat that Bernie Sanders would have gotten had he won. Now, do I think that it would have been better if Bernie had won? Yes, still I do. But there are ways to pressure Biden. But all of the bad stuff still applies. Like, I'm not going to knock on a single door for him. I'm not going to make a single phone call for him. I'm not going to put a sign in my yard. None of that stuff. But I mean, like, the way that you sort of see this thing kind of as it can play out, there are ways, and this is why when everybody kind of was really down after Bernie dropped out, I was like, hey man, we activated more people during that election time as organizations like DSA, labor unions, etc., rank and file regular union members participated in that campaign. People I just met in the street started volunteering with us. You know, that means that people are plugged in and they're engaged when they weren't before. And that means that that something has happened and there is an army that can push against whoever it is up there.
My sister has not been politically engaged for as long as we've been alive, to the point where she likes to just support whoever I'm not supporting to be contrarian. Like, I don't even think she would vote normally. She's been to multiple protests. I saw her in pictures. One of her friends had a Bernie shirt on and I was like, yay.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I think that this time, so between how divisive the primary was, and still is, how bad, just like objectively bad a candidate Joe Biden is. Like, honestly, like, I was like anybody but Bloomberg Biden, like, and here we are.
Judge Klobuchar.
I would have been pissed about it, but I definitely would have voted for Buttigieg, like, yeah, the whole time. But like, I would have showed up for him. I think people are seeing that. And then I think people are also seeing, okay, like, we have this like insane person in the White House and the Democrats have really not done anything to counter him. Like, yeah. And try saying that on Twitter and like 17 white women will show up and be like, did the impeachment mean nothing to you?
Yeah,
and
I'm like, the K-Hive will be mad at you.
It really did it.
The K-Hive will be mad at you.
Oh God. No, the K. So can we talk about, this is like a side note. Kamala Harris came out and was like, K-Hive lifts me up when I'm down. And everyone was like just posting screenshots of like, it's you. Like, it was a mess. Like, anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, which I know you know what we're talking about, just like go type K-Hive into the Twitter search bar and then like, enjoy. Just.
Your brain will melt instantly.
It's impressive. Like, their targeted harassment is like impressive, to be honest. I think people are seeing that, like, okay, we don't actually have a functioning opposition party. You know, I think people are like, hey, this was actually like super blatant. I think this time around, Bernie was 1,000 times better talking about like intersectionality issues. So I think even the old like attacks of, oh, he doesn't care about Black people, he doesn't care about women, he only cares about class. Like, I don't think they hit as hard. So I just think people are like, oh, everything has come together to be like, wait a second, this isn't how it's supposed to be. And I'm like feeling pretty good about it.
Feeling pretty hopeful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm looking at my Twitter feed right now and it says Joe Biden opposes defunding the police, campaign says. Now, I would see this as, of course, going to what you said, Jeff, of course, I want him to be like, we're going to defund the police nationwide right now. But what I don't want, what I don't want is a Bernie Sanders, like, if he was the front runner, to be like, well, we'll look into it.
Yeah.
I'd rather have Joe Biden say he opposes it, because now it's just kicking the anthive. Like, he can't read the room. He can't see, like, he can't even like newspeak it and be like, well, like, so it's just keeping people in the street. And that's what I want. It's like Obama said, like, don't boo vote. I was like, I think it's the other way around. You boo, then go vote. Yeah. Like, I actually said that voting the other day, I had this analogy I made in my head. I said, talking to Aaron, I said, voting is like creatine. Like, so what you do is, if you're working out, like, right? If you're working out, you're hitting the gym, you're doing everything you're supposed to do, you're eating right, you got your cardio going, you got your weightlifting routine going. And then you're like, you know what? I need a little extra. I'll go buy some creatine from GNC. But what you can't do is go first buy creatine and then go sit down on your couch and drink creatine all day and then wonder why you're not like gaining any muscle.
It's really like putting the bro in Bernie.
You can't
bro.
Just vote. Like, you can't. Yeah. It's boo first. It's get in the street first, then go vote.
Yeah, if you ain't mad, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know, like, what's wrong with you. Anyway, yeah,
they're not going to fix it by voting.
We got to wrap it up, but we can definitely keep this going for Thursday. But you can listen to us. This is Good Morning Comrade. You listen to us every Tuesday on WHIV-FM. We also do Thursday releases on goodmorningcomrade.com. You can also get more information on goodmorningcomrade.com about all of our stuff. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, at Comrade Morning. Tell the people bye, folks.
Bye.
Bye, love you, bye.